welcome to Crushed by Margaret K. Bourne-Smith, a podcast about the perils and poetry of unrequited love. My guest today is hilarious podcaster, writer-performer and producer of Crushed by Margaret K. Bourne-Smith. It's the wonderful Sophie Black.
Hello.
Hi, Sophie.
Hi. I feel like I've been like lying upstairs in the landing watching my parents watch TV.
Yes.
Like, and not being able to join in or say that I've been listening. And now I'm like, I can join in the conversation. It's such a thrill.
Because there have been a couple of times where you are literally in the same room, you know, holding the microphone.
Literally having to put my own hand over my mouth so I don't go, oh my God, I've totally had exactly the same situation.
Yeah.
And having to write notes so I can tell you afterwards.
Yes.
You know, like to share it because it's so cathartic.
Yeah. I mean, it has been. It's been therapy for both of us, I would say, hasn't it?
I think actually, I'd go as far as to say for a lot of people coming on, because I think it. Often these things, you sort of, by their very nature, you sort of push them down.
Yes.
You know, especially if you sort of internalise them. I think on one episode you said there's two types of people. There's the kind of person who kind of writes their name out 100 times and keeps it very quiet. And then there's the kind of person who just goes up to them and go, I fancy you. I was never that
person. Neither of us have been that guy.
So actually, there's lots of kind of feelings about people and sort of hidden love affairs that you've had that you might not have even thought about for
years. Because so I feel like a lot of it is really internal. And I think, weirdly, there is a bit of shame, or not a bit of shame, a lot of shame, particularly as some of these feelings are about, like, when you're starting to feel sexual and whatever, and that can feel, I don't know about you, but very wrong.
Or confusing.
Certainly confusing,
And there's definitely loads of sort of confusion. I mean, gosh, maybe even now there's confusion sometimes over, you know, oh, am I attracted to that person because they're really hot, or just because they're really powerful, or they're really funny, or, you know, there's a lot of that going on. So when you're younger, you sort of don't necessarily know whether you just like...
No, absolutely. You know. And as girls, particularly, I think we were sort of encouraged to feed into the sort of romantic narrative maybe attached to a potential husband or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas I was thinking about Andy Samberg recently. Are you aware of Andy Samberg?
Yes,
love Andy Samberg.
Yeah.
And I watched Popstar Never Stop, Never Stopping. I don't know if you've seen that.
Nope.
It's very, very funny. Anyway, I mean, it's really childish in a lot of ways, but I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
But it was the first time in a while that I totally have a crush on him, but I was like, I have to admit, I just want to be him.
Yes.
I just want to be him.
Exactly. Or I want to be in his orbit. I want to be in that world.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, I sort of think so many of my crushes, even as an adult, have been about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and I think somebody, and I can't remember who said it on your podcast. our podcast, beg your pardon. But someone said the idea that sort of somehow that's, as a woman, sometimes that's access into a world. Like, you can't imagine yourself being there as a fellow writer, you know, or actor, or whatever. But you can imagine. It's so sad. And I'm not saying it's right at all.
No.
But as a young person, I might have seen it more likely to be there as a girlfriend than I would be on my own terms, which is really depressing and awful. There's a lot of that going on.
So who was your first that you can remember?
So there's so many that it's like, I can't even, you know, it's like, well, so one I remembered recently because I watched the film again recently, which was quite funny, was Corey Feldman in Stand By Me.
Oh, Corey Feldman is an interesting one in that, because he's, what, third handsomest?
this is what's interesting. So for me, I was always the person who was like, I'd always, this won't surprise you, always fancy the funny one. So always fancy, like, Murdoch in the A-Team when everyone else fancied Face. Do you know what I mean? So I was definitely, go straight to the funny, slightly fucked up one who was sort of funny, Corey Feldman. But then watching it recently, I was like, no, I still would, actually. Sorry, River Phoenix. But no, there's something very cute about him.
And it would be sad if you had lost that.
Yeah.
You know, like, lost being in touch with that little girl that you were, that was, felt that connection.
Yes, and I guess there's a real dodginess of watching a film of a 13-year-old boy and going, yes, let's... Let's just gloss over that.
Yeah.
But no, but it was really funny because my husband said, so we watched this film and he was like, when I was a kid, everyone said I look like Corey Feldman, which he actually totally did. So I was like,
oh my God,
I've come
I see
full
that.
Circle. Yeah. So there we go. So
you won, Sophie.
I totally won. I think he's marginally better than the real Corey Feldman too. So I think we've done okay.
Oh, God, yeah. I'd hope so.
I mean, I know.
Those poor little boys.
I know.
So how old would you have been then? You were a teenager, but a young teenager, maybe?
I think I would have watched Stand By Me, yeah, probably around 12 mm-hmm. or something like that. Yeah, it would have been in early secondary school, so like 11, 12.
Okay, so was it in any way sexual? Like, what did you imagine doing with him? Did you imagine just going to find a dead body in the woods, ideally?
I don't remember what I imagined. I just remember thinking maybe it was an element of wanting to be you. I wanted those glasses.
Yeah.
And do you know what I mean? I sort of, and there was a time at that time, which would have been sort of late 80s, early 90s, where everyone wanted those tags, you know, those kind of army tags.
Dog tags, yes.
Yeah, dog tags.
God, I remember that.
And he had his, I think his, in the film, his dad was like a Vietnam, whatever, so that's why he had those. Yeah, so weird things like that, but I don't think it was, it definitely wasn't sexual,
no,
but it was it was more than, say, Murdoch, which was just like, I thought he was hilarious.
Yeah.
That was definitely not sexual. Corey Feldman was the first one going into that kind of, I really like the way he looks.
Yeah.
Probably liked his troubled character as well. But I'm not sure. The first person where it was really sexual, which will hopefully make you laugh, was a character in The Bill.
Oh, my God. What?
And
I mean...
Yeah, so he was like a random actor, like hasn't really ever done anything since.
I should say, for people who don't know, The Bill is very unglamorous. Like, it's so not Grey's Anatomy.
Really? No. The thing that only the British can do, which is a kind of soap, which is based on very boring reality.
Really dull.
You know,
plodding.
Yeah. I mean, it was, plodding is the word.
The credits were famously two pairs of legs walking away.
Walking away, except they're not walking away because they're always in shot. It was actually quite mesmerising.
The camera was
following. To the fans. Yeah.
But you never saw a bum, did
you?
No, that would have been too titillating.
Yeah, so it was really kind of like quite
mundane.
Very mundane. For a cop, you know, soap, it was very mundane. But he was, of course, the bad guy. So he was the bad cop doing all the kind of deals on the side. So the actor's name was Nick Redding, and the character is called PC Pete Ramsey.
Oh, I love
mean,
the
no
full
one in the
name.
World, if anyone in the world even vaguely, I mean, I think he was only on for like one season or something like that, and I really fancied him.
Did you have any access to pictures of him?
No, because he wasn't that famous. So I used to write to magazines.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
And ask them to print, because that's what they used to do.
Oh, my God, you're right. I'd forgotten that. That's so... Oh, my God, we sound like we're 100 years old.
So you'd say hi, whatever it was, just 17. Which, by the way, I didn't used to buy for ages because I thought you had to be 17 to buy.
Yeah, oh, me too. Very obedient.
Yeah, so...
I mean, it clearly aimed at 14-year-olds, but... Okay.
So I'd write to those magazines, say, please, can you? I think one did.
Oh, that's nice.
And I think that was probably like a TV magazine.
Yeah,
or
I was going to say, you'd have been better
they thought,
off.
Okay, yeah, whatever it was.
He wouldn't have had his shirt off or anything, though, would he?
Oh, no. I mean, the picture was him. It was a small circle as well in the letters page. Do you know what I mean? And it was like just him dressed as a copper. That was probably the only picture you could get
of him. Was it full length or...?
No, it would have been like cut. I would have
size.
Cut it out. I would have bought probably a few. I mean, it's really sad.
A collage of the same little face.
Yeah. And then I remember we went on holiday one summer, me and my mum and my brother, to Devon. And then we watched it on TV and he was shot. He was killed off. And my mum and my brother pissed themselves, thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And I was literally crying, like sobbing in front of the TV.
And oh, they were like, God.
My mum, brother, so much cooler than me. Like, yeah, just looking at me like, how did we get this
child?
Yeah, like, yeah, how did she get into our family? And I'd just be literally sobbing. I mean, it took me a good few days to kind of, you know, pull myself together, yeah.
Oh, my God. Mm. Oh, because the thing is, while it obviously is hilarious.
Yeah.
It is. Like, oh. I think I'd have been too empathetic to really laugh because I'd have been like, oh no, this has sort of destroyed her little
deal.
World.
Yeah, because also I guess in that world where now you have a link, and there's so many reasons why that this is terrible, but you always have a sort of link to those people. So they might be on Twitter or you could see them. They're visible somehow in the rest of the world. Whereas this was like my only link to him was this show. And when he's killed off. And also I think, and we've talked about this a bit before, I think it was the character,
I was going
really.
To say, so anyway, him cropping up in some period
it's
drama.
It's not going to really
not going to do it for you.
Not he ever really did. I don't think. Sorry, apologies if he's gone on to be. I don't think he has. I did look him up recently. But
did you?
And yeah, I did actually. What? I think he's a really good person. He's done lots of charity. Oh. Work. Like he now lives in Africa or something and like has started his own charity or whatever. So
you
I obviously
chose
could
well.
See beneath the like really tough boy exterior and see the rough diamond underneath.
What sort of bad coppering did he do?
I think it wasn't nothing too bad, obviously, mundane show.
Yeah.
But it was like, I think he was having an affair with a married woman and then maybe he was like taking cash for, like he was dodgy, but he wasn't, this is only the bill. So
yeah,
he was
a copper
who was like a bit of a bad egg. And then I think in the end, he was shot doing the right thing as most bad characters tend to do, which
so
is
he
like,
he will go to heaven.
He will go to heaven. But of course, I always saw that this was his. You know,
it's just so awful. And do you think that, so you have in the past liked,
looking so polite.
Don't rinse your eyes. I don't know, bad boys might be pushing it.
Definitely.
But there's, you like a bit of.
I think so, yes, and I don't know what that is. Yeah, always. And I guess maybe there's something of, so of that spectrum, the sort of, Murdoch and Corey Feldman is still on that. It's the nice end of that spectrum.
Yeah, but I mean, they need to be entertaining, don't
they? Yeah, exactly. They need to be entertaining. But yeah, I think I've always quite liked, would always have liked the bad one or the naughty one.
Yes.
And I think that followed me through into real, pretty much till I met my husband. So till my late 30s. Yeah.
And was there a big crossover? So the people you had crushes on in real life.
Yes.
Were they like PC Nick? No, what is his name?
Think.
PC Ramsey?
PC Pete Ramsey.
Sorry, PC
or
Pete Ramsey.
The actor Nick Redding.
Yeah,
okay?
AKA.
Yeah. So, no, in real life, I was just terrible at... I didn't know how to flirt. I was really close to my brother. We got on really well. So I never had any... I always friends with lots of boys.
Yeah.
But didn't really quite know how to sort of... take that to another. I just thought, well, we'll just be really, really good friends then.
Yeah.
So actually, a lot of the things that you said have always really chimed with me, where I'd sort of think it was somehow I'd just be really, really good friends with somebody. And then I think, well, then obviously now the next step is that we go out. And then I would sort of like deliver that almost as a kind of, well, I've been thinking about this.
I've put together my scrapbook.
And I think this makes sense. Yeah. We should probably. So I've had lots of kind of conversations where I've had to sort of say,
oh God, oh, I feel ill.
You know, I had one, this is so, yeah. So I was really good friends with this guy at university and just say no, guys, but I was this time taking, you know, a few recreational drugs. And I remember having like had taken a pill or something. Mm. I was like 18 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were waiting for him and a few other friends to arrive at a club and he never arrived. And I just got fixated about him arriving. And I sort of think that sort of precipitated a sort of whole, which I do really believe was like chemically induced, a kind of whole... a crush on him, like seeing him in a different way, seeing a friend in a different way, and then thinking, oh, right, no, it's actually that.
This means something.
Mm. And then I sort of had this crush on him for ages, and then I felt like I had to sort of say to him, you know, I really care about you. And it was really painful. And yeah, I mean, madness really, because it wasn't even, I don't think, sexual. It was like, it was an intellectual thing where I decided we should be together.
Yeah.
And what it was sort of like kick-started by a little bit of...
and it's funny, it's a bit like what we've talked about before, about sometimes we have a dream about someone.
Exactly,
and then suddenly it's strange how you can't, that it comes so suddenly sometimes, but you can't let it go.
It just takes hold. Suddenly something was happening that I was, you know, temporarily looking at him through a different lens. Mm. And then I kind of couldn't get out of that and just sort of thought, oh, that was the thing. So yeah, I had that. So it didn't last. The crush didn't last very long, but the fallout from it lasted ages.
What do you mean?
In the sense that all my friends kind of always thought that I still fancied him, and he sort of thought I still fancied him, and I couldn't away from it.
I think it's a really interesting example of the power of crushes and the power of putting it out there, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This thing of, so my daughter's about to be Friar Lawrence in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh.
And there's a big, and I think this is fine to say, but it was sort of hilarious, Romeo and Juliet, when they were cast, because it was like a big deal that she had, and apparently no longer does, but she had a crush on him. So this is already, the show is not, you know, for months, already a big drama. And you sort of think, that is exactly what this drama group wants.
Yeah, the excitement
of that. And this poor girl, like, I don't know whether she still does or she doesn't, but that is in her narrative now.
Yeah.
And what happens out of that is, you know, and these are young teenagers, this sort of perfect storm.
Totally.
Of this is... And people are excited by it, I think.
Yeah, it's a really weird one. I mean, I remember years afterwards, and we went on to be really good friends. We shared a flat, and it was like that. None of that could have happened if I'd fancied him.
Yeah.
And I was friends with his girlfriends, and you know what I mean? It was all of that. And I remember one girlfriend of his saying, like years later, going, oh, yeah, I remember him first talking about you and saying it's this girl who used to fancy me. And I was like, oh my God. You know, so like, yeah.
That's your story.
Yeah, that's who I am. Like, if you were going to give me a little if he was going to give me a little biog, that would be in the three sentences.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's so nuts, isn't it?
Because I do. Nuts.
It's so awful having to kind of.
But it makes sense, of course.
Yeah, because I've done it with other people. Now I will always think of you as that.
If I meet
him, I'll be like, is that the one?
Yeah.
You know, because it's fun, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's fun to.
And it's nice. It's nice when you know that someone has a crush on you. So it's not like, you know, that'll be. And I guess if someone who's a really good friend comes up and tells you that about themselves, you're. That's going to be quite powerful. Like, even if you don't have any feelings for them, that's really kind of...
But, Sophie, there are people that I really no longer fancy that I would like it scrubbed from the record.
Well, I have
that's
to say,
the thing.
I went with him, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, no, please. Yeah, I cannot, like, he literally makes me feel sick now. And but that's...
But I think also, without being too sort of... hetero about this, but I think that men and women are quite different in the way, you know, so we've talked before about how women, their sort of attraction is sort of the tentacles of that go so many different places in terms of who that person is, how you see yourself, you know, it's all so complex, I think. And not saying for everybody, but for lots of men, it's a bit knee-jerk. It's pretty much like if you're going to fancy someone at 18, you're probably still going to fancy them when they're 68, not quite, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's going to be like an element to them that you'll always, or maybe that's not true.
That's interesting. Have you read One Day by David
Nicholls? No, I haven't, but I know.
It's great. But there's a great bit in One Day where you sort of think they're both going to get together. They're both single and it looks like, and she always had a crush on him.
Yeah.
And he says, I do fancy you. And it's a kind of like,
yeah.
And then, but what he says is, but I sort of fancy everyone.
Yeah,
and it's, I know, it's so perfect because it's like, oh, well, you've just destroyed what was built up in her head.
Yeah,
and so nothing does happen, I think, at that point.
Right.
But it's actually, it's really honest, exactly, and it says so much. So she has built this thing up. She has had him in her mind, and she does become friends with him, and she sees other people and whatever.
Yeah.
But she, I think she, especially at that point, still has this kind of built-up fantasy, whereas he's like, yeah, I fancy you, but I fancy her and her.
Yeah,
and her
exactly.
And her.
This is all
so different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember a guy when I was a when I was a teenager. Again, I was at a party. Basically, a friend of mine went to a boys' school. I went to a girls' school. We were really close. We'd speak on the phone every night. Never any kind of attraction on either side. But it was very useful because we had, you know, our friends really liked each other, whatever. And we had like a New Year's Eve party. We were probably about 15, and I really fancied a friend of his. And I remember sitting on a sofa, and. And I'd gone there with my one of my best friends who everyone always fancied.
Yeah. I hear you.
And we sat and we sat on the sofa and he came and sat next to me. And I remember thinking, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And he lifted his arm to put his arm around me and I was just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then she was, so imagine me, I was sitting next to her, so he was sitting on one side, and then he started stroking her back behind my back. So eventually I just had to sort of sheepishly get up and move away.
Just like, oh my God.
Oh no.
Was she into it?
No, I don't think anything happened.
She didn't think it was you stroking her.
No, she didn't think it was me stroking her. And she didn't... It's not like she got off with him or anything like that. But yeah, it wasn't...
It became
it was just so heartbreaking.
Because it's funny what you were saying earlier about you just being around and being around and then that's the next step. I was thinking about sitting close to people and how exciting that was.
Yeah.
And I was thinking I almost had a feeling that if I just sit close enough to them, I'll fuse to them and then I will be with them forever, you know. It's like obviously not consciously, but I think that that was the sort of like, oh my God, and he's... he's chosen to sit next to me. And
but I do think, going back to what I was saying, I sort of think there was a massive gap in my understanding. Mm. And I don't know if that came from films or whatever. I sort of didn't know. I didn't know how to flirt.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel confident or comfortable in my own attractiveness or sexuality or anything. So I didn't know how to sort of play on that at all.
Yeah.
And so therefore I didn't know when people fancy, you know, looking back, I kind of go, oh yeah, I think that person probably fancied me.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
Yeah, yeah. You could have got a snog out of it at least.
Yeah, totally.
I think about this as well. I was thinking about that, you know, taking your rational collection of ideas that you take to someone to say, this is why we should be together.
Yeah.
And thinking that it just will never work, even if the person really fancies you, because it's like, oh my God, you mean
he
wants to do a contract? I can't. The pressure is so different. I think back about the way I told people that I fancied them, and I think if I just sat close to them and said, I think you're really hot.
Yeah, exactly.
Things would have moved in a different way.
Yeah,
and
then
then it's like gently, gently, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And way less, you're putting way less on the line. So if it doesn't, you know, so it
you're
actually,
not saying I will be devastated if this doesn't happen.
Yeah. And you get yourself to a point where it's like there's no way out. You have to say it because you have to sort of almost put yourself out of your misery. But in a way, if you've got to that point, you know the answer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because there will have been situations a bit like that, you know, where nothing did happen, but you've got a reason why it didn't. And
you know. It's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah, the responsibility that you have to take for you did that a bit. You know, you made that mistake of sort of putting, I don't know, putting certain barriers up and then, you know, presenting your case.
Yeah.
And
it was very much that. It was a very logical case.
Yeah. Whereas the girls who were getting action, and even then getting boyfriends, it's not just snogging and whatever.
No, yeah, yeah.
It's just sort of gently falling into something and sort of going, oh, hey, we fancy each other a bit.
It's a light, there was
a
lightness. Much more of a lightness.
Yeah.
But I do think as a confident, an innate, I mean, I don't think anyone's really confident, you know, in their teens properly, but I think I had no idea, really. I had no sort of I remember my mum actually actively saying to me that I needed to, quote, put my goods in the window, unquote, which I'm pretty sure wouldn't fly. I'm not going to be saying that to my daughter. But, you know, I sort of went around in big baggy jumpers and watched loads of TV and comedy and was just a bit of a geek.
Yeah,
I know what she was trying to say, but yeah, I didn't have any.
I'm sure she wasn't like literally saying, get your cleavage
no,
out.
No, she wasn't, but she was like, celebrate your, you know, your body and how you look. And
it's interesting because I remember talking to a friend who said that she just always assumed that boys wanted to sleep with her. And she was not saying it in a complimentary thing. Like she was saying, it's awful, isn't it? And I was like, I've literally never, I mean, this was in my mid-20s, literally never thought anyone wanted to sleep with me at all.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's such, and neither of these things are true, I would say.
No.
But it's an interesting, she didn't have any male friends.
Yeah,
you know,
that's not
what men were for.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I think probably young people nowadays have a much better sort of balance of it all.
Do you still get crushes on people now?
Yes, I do.
She's folded her arms.
Yes, I do. not very often, and also not in the same way.
I was
going to
say, in different ways.
I think you said before, which I used to be quite like, where if I fancy somebody on TV or film or, you know, musician or whatever, I would imagine our life together.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, when I was younger, in great detail.
Yeah. And wallpapers.
Yeah, and I'd sort of imagine the scenario where we would have met. You know,
you have to do the whole set up.
Yeah. And this is, I'm talking about people I've never met.
Yeah.
You know, I would I'd create a life for us, a family, and, you know, everything. So I do all of that. So
do you know it's really expensive to, because I really wanted to put together, so I get told I look like people.
Yeah.
And you know that thing of the best person you look like and the worst person you've been told you look like.
We've done this, I think, on Facebook. Yes.
And the idea is that you are exactly between them. So I wanted to get my best and my worst and put them together and find a... And there's loads of sites where you can do this, but it all costs money because I think people really want to know what their children will look like with either celebrities or, you know, two different people, or maybe someone you know or whatever. You can put the photos together and find out what your child, really creepy.
And then go and meet them at stage door and say, hiya.
I would have spent all my money doing it.
I would have just done that all the time.
I didn't spend the money on Faye Dunaway
I would have named
and
them.
Jimmy White, which is what I wanted to
do. Oh, wow.
Jimmy White. Fucking hell. But it would be amazing if it was just a picture of me, wouldn't it?
Yes, wouldn't it? Just a perfect, perfect picture of you. I thought what you were going to say is if you're supposed to be somewhere in between those two people, then that'll give you a kind of accurate idea of what you look like to the world. I remember Fergus Craig, who hasn't been on this podcast, very funny person. I remember him saying how to be a good actor, you have to understand what you look like to other people.
Oh my God.
And I remember at the time, and I can't remember the sentence, so I'm not doing this story justice, but he says something like, to other people, I look like a, you know, whatever it was, like a kind of a boy in his late teens who's taken too many E's, something like that. It was just so, and he's like, and you're like, oh yeah, you always get parts. It's like, you know, you're working in a petrol station or you're...
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yes. Now I get it. And he's like, I just project that back at the world. You know, and you're like, oh, right, yeah.
You have to do that, yeah. Ed Weeks, who is an actor that we both know. In fact, you did a show with him.
I did indeed.
He is a lovely and very handsome man who's working in Hollywood now. But he was put up for Tarzan once and he went in and the casting director said, has your agent seen you?
Oh, oh, God.
Which is, pretty devastating.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you have to know what you...
Yeah, you've got to know what you're projecting.
Like.
Yeah, exactly. I think Ed is actually an example of someone who does absolutely know what
nailing
he's very
it.
Good. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I should say that when I was at drama school, we did an exercise where we were told
did
what
you?
We looked like.
Oh.
And mine was chunky librarian. And I suddenly remembered that last week and it sort of hurt all over.
Yes, of course. Yeah, because of course that is subjective and someone can say, can write you off for certain things. That's very true. So that's kind of, that can be really damaging. But yeah, so I don't have any crushes on people in real life.
No.
Not to say that isn't cool, but like I just don't, or I don't really do that anymore. And I don't, and if I fancy somebody in who is famous, I don't then do the kind of, and this is how we'd meet in my head thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But somebody, I thought I was the only person in the world who fancied this person. My husband is a theatre producer, as you know, and he had an opening in New York, and me and loads of members, female members of his family, most of his family, were amazing, brilliant, funny women.
Yeah.
And we're all having dinner before this show. So it's like, and we're all in different ages. So there's probably ranging from sort of 60 to sort of mid 30s.
Yeah.
Five or six women. And so we're saying, so he's doing an opening night on Broadway. So lots of famous people. And he's going through the list. We're like, who's coming? Who's coming? And he's like, and he says, you know, Jonah Hill. And we're like, okay, yeah, yeah. And he's, you know, doing the list. You know, pretty famous.
Yeah,
but we're
really
like,
famous.
Yeah, whatever. And then he said, Sam Rockwell. And we all went, oh my God, I love him! At the same time. And then all looked really shocked that all these other women was like, well, hang on, it's only me. And I think he's one of those people that everyone thinks
secretly,
that, do you think you're the only person who likes Sam Rockwell? And actually the world likes Sam Rockwell.
Oh my God.
So it was really funny.
Did it feel like it was taken away from you a little bit, finding out that all these other women...
I guess I did, because I thought I was the clever one who'd worked out that there was something
he's
actually very attractive. Guys, I don't A-lister brilliant actor
has somehow
I'm the only one who actually sees his, you know, that how attractive
the inner
he is.
Sam Rockwell.
But what was
funny
was then a while later, I took my kids to go and see a film which is called The Bad Guys. Which I mean, I have
my kids have gone to that.
Threshold. Like, I'm quite happy. Most films I can sit, kids' films I can sit through and I'm like, great, it has a plot, tick, fine. Yeah, it's like, fine. But actually, this is one of the good ones. Quite funny. Was a very funny trailer. So we were like, we're definitely going to go and see that. So we went to go and see it. And about halfway through, I was thinking, I really fancy this wolf. Is there something about him? And I was looking and I was thinking, is it the animation? Like his swagger? Like he had a real swagger?
Yeah.
And it was worrying me slightly because I was like, I don't have that feeling very often. And this is a fucking cartoon. And then the credits roll and it's Sam Rockwell playing the wolf. And I'm like, okay, well, there you go.
So did you feel there was a bigger connection there going, I wonder if all of those other ladies would have noticed the
sexiness
of
this wolf? They have the connection with him that I do.
Yeah, no, I didn't think that. That's so good.
Yeah.
We were talking about Welcome to Wrexham.
Oh, yes.
Which our lovely guest Humphrey Carr is a star of. And I've got very into it, absolutely love it.
Yes, it's brilliant.
And I said to Dan, we were watching the 10th episode or whatever, and I turned to Dan and I said, oh my God, I really love Ryan Reynolds.
I mean,
and he went, Margaret, if you think that you have covered that up in any way, you are such an idiot. And I still think I do, Sophie.
Oh,
I still think
so
I'm like, I'm so
sweet.
Cool. Nobody would have noticed that I'm sitting up.
And you're going, I know, tonight, should we watch Welcome to... I mean, we could actually probably watch three in a row. I mean, you know.
Oh, and I'm on tour at the moment.
So good.
So I have more time to myself than I usually do. And
yes.
I watched the 2009 film The Proposal, starring Ryan Reynolds. And the other woman...
That's a good film.
It's a good film, yeah.
Okay.
He's less... I mean, he's more attractive now, to be honest. He's a little bit blandly handsome in those days.
Yes.
But he... Sandra Bullock's character name in that is... Margaret.
Oh, that's nice.
So I've said to Dan, for my Christmas present, I would just like all of the times Ryan Reynolds says Margaret in that film.
He is so good.
I'm 47.
So good. So good. So good.
so lovely
it's
and so Canadian.
It's
and
so sweet.
But I have to say, it's the first time that I've fancied an A-list Hollywood anyone for a very, very long
yes.
time. Maybe, if ever. It's not my bag, usually.
I wonder what the difference is now. I think now...
I think it's Welcome to Wrexham, I think.
Yeah,
being,
that
being
is.
Put in that weird
But I also think now I care more about...
This is so
Go
sad.
On. I care more about who they are. I had a very confusing crush on Justin Theroux.
Oh, yes.
Who I don't actually find attractive.
Yeah.
So that's...
Weird.
Definitely
already.
Not. Yeah, because he's quite...
Oh, he's quite, yeah,
he's
masculine
quite sort of,
and...
Yeah, he's quite
Sophie's
masculine.
Sophie's doing some stuff with her shoulders.
Well, he's quite kind of well manicured. I'm not really
yes.
into that.
No, you're
like, he's
right.
quite kind
you're
of
right.
sculpted, and that's not
yeah.
really my thing.
Yeah.
But then when you find out a bit about him as a person... So it's almost started, like, from listening to him on podcasts and stuff, where I was like, oh, you
oh,
actually sound...
Well, where he was doing an impression of Melvin Bragg on Louis Theroux's podcast.
Oh, yes!
I mean,
and you're
very
like, oh,
funny.
You're really funny. You're friends with Amy Sedaris, who's, like, the most amazing woman in the world. And you're kind of like... And so then this goes back to... Maybe this goes back to the child thing of going, maybe I don't know if I really even fancy you. I just kind of want to be in your orbit. I
yeah.
think you seem like a really cool person.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just dead from the waist down. It's never, ever been about sex. And I'm just like, oh, they seem
oh,
rather
well,
interesting person.
Have you? Well, come on then. Have you ever had anything that was like purely sexual where you actually just thought, I think I don't
yes.
like them in
oh,
real
yes.
life? Go
I
on.
I do. So I'm going to have to tell this very carefully so that he is not...
Oh, so if you're giving yourself a lot of edits to do.
I am giving... I know. Okay, so let me say. So have I ever had this? In my 20s, a lot of my female friends were either living up north or living abroad.
Mm-hmm.
They were not living in London. I, as I've said, lots of male friends. So I kind of ran with, is probably the best way of saying it, a big group of my male friends and then sort of their male friends. So it would often be me and sort of 10
20.
Blokes going clubbing or whatever. And one of these blokes, I really fancied when I first met him. He went to school with one of my friends, or whatever, and I thought he looked just like Christian Slater, and I thought he was really, really sexy. But I thought he was a knob. Like he that what came out of his mouth was really annoying. You know how people sometimes kind of. Go on about how brilliant they are when they actually probably don't feel like that inside themselves.
Yeah.
But like, and you know, and when you're younger, it's a bit more coarse or whatever. But I remember thinking he's such an old, but I thought he was so good looking. It was a real problem. So that went on and off for years.
Wow.
Where we would end up in bed together. But it was, in a way, it was quite simple.
Because
there was never any...
Yeah, you definitely didn't want to
yeah.
have anything.
And actually, I'd like to say, actually, as he has grown up, I think he then switched over. I think he became less attractive, but much nicer person.
I remember... Oh, God, imagine hearing that.
Yeah,
on
I know. That's I really... I don't think he's ever going to listen to this. So
no,
I think
no.
It's fine.
No, but I was just thinking about what a weird conundrum that would be.
Yeah.
To sort of think, have I become less attractive as I've become nicer?
Well, I don't... I think we've already established that I fancy horrible people.
Sure.
My husband aside. I think there's probably that element as well that I would have probably been able to accept his not niceness
yeah.
more readily than someone else might have been. But
yeah.
But also, yeah, he's a much nicer person now. So I think he's a bit more rounded and probably doesn't feel the need to sort of show off as much.
Yeah.
So consequently,
I'm sure he's all right.
Dead to me because... He is no longer sexy.
Sorry.
Yeah, gosh.
And have we covered, your weirdest? I suppose you've mentioned a wolf and a man from the Bill.
A wolf, a cartoon wolf. Yeah, a man from the Bill. So probably the in a way, what my answer should have been at the very beginning.
So who was your first?
Yeah, or? In a way that, again... I find it quite difficult looking back to see was it really sexual or not, yada, yada, yada. But
no. Crush can definitely not, can be not sexual as well.
Yeah.
Like the ones I had as a child.
Yes.
Like, we're not.
Yeah, and there's definitely crossover between, yeah. I think. So for instance, it's if shifts. We look at Sam Rockwell being definitely 100% sexual crush.
Even as a wolf.
Even as a wolf. Almost more so as a wolf. And then someone... So when I was about 11, I became obsessed with the Beatles for... About 3 years, I probably only even listened to Beatles songs. Mm-hmm. And John Lennon was my world.
Yeah.
And on the anniversary of his death every year, I would go into school with a black armband.
Oh.
I loved him. I still love him. Like, I can't even be objective about, you know.
I think those ones that happen when you're that age, you can't ever be objective about them.
No, he's just... So for me... I think he is, and that is understandable, then you can understand everything else, in a way that there's so much of him that probably is, in many ways, my template for things that I, you know, it's the funny one, it's the person who's a bit slightly unhinged sometimes. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, so. Not always the nicest. It's interesting, though, because that I felt like when I got into the Beatles, which was probably a little bit later, I mean, they were always sort of around in my house,
yeah,
but then,
of course,
you know.
Yeah.
But it was a bit like, well, Paul's a bit, you know, a bit vanilla. Not that I would use that
which
word
is
then.
Awful.
Yeah, but
yes,
that's
he's
like,
amazing.
Oh, he's so, well,
but
he's so, I mean, God, and you watch Get Back and you think, oh my God.
I went to see him in concert recently.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is amazing. He's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. But he's transcended all of that, but it did feel like, and I think he's aware of this as well, he was like the sweet vanilla, almost bland one compared to the sort of spiky genius of John Lennon. And I have to say, I think they're both geniuses.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not much argument about that.
Yeah.
But it felt like the more interesting choice, you know, the sort of like, oh, you don't go for the, you know, the round cheeks and the big eyes and that you're going for the spiky one who's
but I think it went,
naked and...
This is another podcast. But yeah, I think it went deeper than that with them. So I think Paul McCartney has said that he actually... So they both experienced loss as kids. Mm-hmm. But his was at least within a kind of happy framework of a family. You know, his mother sadly died, but he had a really close family and everything was otherwise healthy.
Yeah.
Whereas with John Lennon, there was a very, very... sort of, you know, slightly screwy setup. And so there was much more going on than just the loss of his mother. It was kind of like, so I think, and without getting to pop psychology, I think there was an element of that in my childhood. So there was, I did probably, and I probably still do, kind of drawn to people who kind of know the dark side or, you know, or are kind of happy or quite happy to kind of own their own kind of pain or whatever.
Yeah, I recently read Rob Delaney's book, Heart That Works, which is amazing. But he talks about, well, actually, he says he can't relax around people who haven't suffered tragedy anymore. And he was like, you know, he was sort of like taking the piss out of himself for saying it. But you do think, well, of course you're drawn to that. Of course you can't, you know, be with people who are just like, what do you know?
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting there and I am feeling, a friend described it as having, like feeling like everyone else has got armour on and you're feeling the wind on your very thin skin. You need other people like that.
Yeah, and I have always been the person who, if I am in a situation and it does feel very safe or that no, everyone's kind of, I don't know, in that realm, I'll sort of throw a grenade in the middle of the room to see how everyone reacts. And the person who reacts to it, in my mind, well, will be my friend forever. Do you know what I mean?
But
when we went
to... That's really interesting, testing them.
Yeah, and kind of seeing... So when we went to NCT when I was pregnant with my son, and David, my husband, who's so the opposite of this, he's so, like, boundlessly positive and sort of friendly and beaming. And he was like, he's getting really excited. He's like, we're going to make friends with these people, will be our friends forever, you know. And I was like, we'll see about that. And we literally walked in and there's all these people sitting around and they're all couples. Even that was weird to me. I'm not friends with lots of couples. I'm friends with different people and then I might be friends with their partners too or whatever. But I was a little bit freaked out by it. And and one of the dads-to-be said to me, we were all saying, oh, what do you do? And he said, oh, I'm a doctor. And someone said, oh, what hospital are you, do you work at? And he said, St. Helier. And I said, oh, my mum died in that hospital, which is true.
Did you say that in that tone?
I did. And it is true. But I was. It was a grenade. It was like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to drop a grenade. I mean, Dave's looking at me going, oh, these could have been all our friends.
Why do you have to ruin everything? But you're right. Needless, if you have someone react really well, like
if
exactly
someone
how
had
you
laughed,
want.
Honestly, if someone had laughed at that, yeah. I would be friends. We'd be friends for life.
Yeah.
But no one did. Everyone obviously looked really uncomfortable because it's such a mean thing to do and say. But I'm pretty convinced that like most of my good friends would have reacted to that in the way that I
had
been able to deal with it. Maybe a bit further. It's so mean there, isn't it?
Yeah. It's an absolute classic.
It's a shitty thing.
No, I wouldn't say shitty at all. I would say
it's a grenade. Yeah.
It's a grenade, but you know, that's
John Lennon made me do it, that's all I'm saying.
I'm gonna get you a t-shirt that's that
would actually
on
be
it.
Quite good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it goes to show that, yeah, what you're drawn to in your friends is you know, absolutely the same as what you end up being drawn to.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to think your friends aren't all horrible people like you went for as
I am remember I'm not going to say it out loud, but I am remembering a joke you made to me recently. It's definitely why we're friends and is unrepeatable.
Completely unrepeatable.
Yes.
So Sophie, so when I say to you biggest crush, mm-hmm. who is it? Who are we doing the maths on?
I'm going to say I think it should probably be Nick Redding.
Nick Redding.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's single D, not double D.
Well, it doesn't matter, does it? But okay.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. But
oh, that's a weird spelling.
I don't want to jinx
Redding.
It. Is I know it, it is. Oh, yeah. Maybe it's just a. You know,
okay. L O V.
This will not be the first time. This.
No.
This.
It's pretty good. It's 68%. How do you feel about that? He's a very good person, but he lives in Africa.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
So, sorry.
In a way.
And I am married, happily married.
Oh, yeah, that too.
There's that too.
Sure.
So, yeah.
But come on, Nick Redding.
Yeah, Nick Redding, PC Ramsey.
PC Ramsey.
Yeah, watch out.
Yeah. Guys. Well, Sophie, it's been a joy. I feel like we should do this regularly.
I
catch up.
Love it. This is, you are doing a public service.
I think so too. Sophie Black, thank you very much.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe as it helps people find where we are.